verse 12. If you're new here, we are in studying through the letter to the Philippians, and we're in the second chapter. We're in the 12th verse, 12 and 13, actually. We'll have it up on the overhead if you need to take a look at that. I want to read a quote from you that I've always thought was kind of neat from Martin Luther King. Everybody can be great because everybody can serve. All you need is a heart full of grace and a soul full of love. Isn't that true? All you need is a heart full of grace and a soul full of love. Loving God and others, that is what we, in some senses, call our vision, is a condensed statement of this first and second commandments of Jesus when he says this. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. And the second, like it, is this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. Mark 12, 30 and 31. That's our vision here at Harvest. It's more than a value. It's more like a value. That we desire to obtain in our life is to be able to love God and then love the people around us. So what we like to do is call it our passion. Our passion is to love God and love people. Now this morning I want to talk to you about working out your Christianity and me working out my Christianity, because the message that I have today is about love, and it's just as much to me as it is to you, as I thought through. Because, you know, a lot of times when we begin to love people, a lot of times it becomes mechanical, and a lot of times we think, okay, serving and loving means doing the maintenance in the building and teaching a class and doing the cleaning, serving in the nursery. But loving God and others is a very personal thing for each one of us. It's a lifestyle to love and serve and give and make ourselves available to others. This is what Paul says in Galatians. For you, brethren, have been called to liberty or freedom. Only do not use freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, or fulfilled in one saying, is what Paul means. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love, generosity, availability. It takes those three things. So I want to challenge you today to a lifestyle of love, not just an occasion, but a lifestyle of love, a lifestyle of generosity, because it takes generosity. And then a lifestyle of availability, because it takes being available, doesn't it? Working out your Christianity inside God's plan that he's made for you and I. So let's read our passage from Philippians chapter 2, verse 12. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more my absence, work out your own salvation. And what Paul means is work out your own Christianity, is the way we'd say it in modern terms. Work out your Christianity with fear and trembling, with a deep respect for God. For it is God who works in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. So there's two things. God asks us to work out our Christianity, and then God instills in us what we should do. In attempting to apply our working out our Christianity in our own life, like I said before, it can be mechanical. It can be very draining without the needed element of love for people. And by that, I mean occasionally loving a person or having the opportunity to practice love on someone once in a while when it's required really doesn't work very well. It's draining. It has to be a lifestyle. It has to be who you are as a Christian. And by that, I mean loving as a way of life, a way that you and I respond in a normal routine every day because we are Christians. Are you proud of that? We're Christians. We work out our Christianity with love towards others in a consistent manner. Now, how can that be? You know, last week I was walking through the halls and I saw Bobby Hill, and we started talking. And he said, you know, I've been thinking about something, Steve. And I said, what's that? And he said, you know, we talk about loving the people in the community coming in. And he says, when I walk through I see someone walk through the door, I just don't have gushy feelings for him. And I said, yeah. And so he said, what happens is when I see someone come through the door, I realize that God values them. God has high value for them. And so he said, if God has high value for them, when they walk through the door, I have high value. I thought, oh, that's kind of cool, isn't it? To value them when they come through the door. That's much easier because you just can't muster up this feeling of love for people. But God tells us to love him, and when he uses the word agape, it's a kind of an action love. And so I think Bobby was just right. It's valuing people, valuing them. And we can love a person because we see the value in them. Not because we have to muster these feelings with each other. And when I say value, this is what I mean. Is their worth as a person, as God sees them, their importance to God, and therefore their importance to us. We value that they are highly significant in God's eyes, realizing that Christ paid the price for them, came to this earth, died, was buried for their sin, and rose again. That's how much value he has. Listen to this out of Ephesians. It talks, and I think this will demonstrate the value. Ephesians 1:18. The eyes of your understanding be enlightened. And when he says enlightened, he means illuminated. The Greek word is where we get our word photo, meaning light. And so he's saying that the eyes of your understanding have light, that you may know what is the hope of his calling, which is to die for our sin, and what the riches of the glory. And a lot of times when we hear the word glory, it kind of, I don't know about you, but I think, okay, splendor, majesty, but it also means a high opinion. It means God's high opinion of those who belong to him. Isn't that interesting? And so he wants you and I to understand what his high opinion is in us. And then he says, what are the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints? So what does that mean? That means that God has such high regard for you and I that he can't wait to come back to get us. And you know what? We can't wait for him to come back and get us because we want him, right? And so it's a mutual thing. It's, you know, a lot of times I think in our head we get to thinking, okay, God puts up with this. You know, I mean, we sin and we do these kind of things. And so, okay, God just like, well, okay, I'm going to let you in my heaven through the back door. You ever kind of feel that way a little bit? That is not what Paul is saying here. It's the front door, baby. He wants us badly, and we want him badly, and he can't wait because his whole inheritance, his whole, and you know, when you think of inheritance, just think of how if you have a uncle or a distant uncle and they're rich, and you think, ooh, boy, I'd love to get that inheritance, right? What do you mean? Oh, you want to get their money. You want to get their riches, okay? Well, that's just exactly his riches are you. You realize that? You're his dollars. You're his riches. He wants you. And by George, I want him. How about you? Are you awake this morning?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to hear at least a laugh or something. Okay. Are you following what I'm saying, though? Man, God loves us. And The problem is we see ourselves through our sin, we see ourselves through our stupidity and lack of wisdom at times, and he has these rose-colored glasses he puts on, and he goes, man, do I love Steve. Man, do I love you. And I can't wait to have you. You're my riches. You're my treasure. We have extremely high value. And so because of that, we can value others. God sees the high value in them. And that's how we can love people, is having the same value in them that God has for them. John says this, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. And by this, all will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. We will be known because we love. There's an old song that years ago we used to sing a lot, and it went like this. They will know that we are Christians by our love. Yeah, okay, some of you were in church, okay, in those days. Do you remember that? They will know we are Christians by our love, by our love. They know that we are Christians by our love. In fact, I always have to laugh about this because I have a pastor friend out in Cope, Colorado. And every time he got started to get grumpy, his wife used to sing that to him. She'd just look right at him and he says, well, no, we are Christians by our love, by our love. And it would make him mad, but he would straighten out. But isn't it the truth? Shouldn't the world know that we are Christians by our love? Because we are lover of God and lover of people. So let me see if I can help us understand this. Love is not a program. Somehow we as Christians get into these programs of greeting people or loving people or serving people, and love isn't a program. It's not an occasional response. It's not just an opportunity to exercise our faith at times, but love is a lifestyle. The other day, Debbie said to me, well, I talked to, she was Counsel Lane, and she said, well, you know, if you have any problem, you can move you and your kids into our house, and you can use our spare bedroom, and we'll fix up our basement for the kids and that kind of thing. And, at first I thought, do I want to do that? You know what I'm saying? I mean, as a natural response, and I think, well, yes, I do, because I love her and I love her kids. Because it's not an opportunity, or it's not just a program, it is a lifestyle. And it's how we live, it's how we take our breath, as children of God, as citizens of heaven, as ambassadors or representatives of Christ. If we aren't loving, who's going to do it? Who's going to do it? I think it has to be almost built into our DNA, so to speak, as a Christian, as we work out our Christianity. And frankly, I believe it's to build into our hearts when we become functioning, faith-believing believers of Christ. God places that love into our heart, and you know it, because when you don't want to love someone, there's a little whisper inside your mind that says, you need to love them. Or is it just me? Does that happen to you? Especially, there are people that come in off the street, and we have a regular, now that we're out on Highway 7 here, we have a regular people that come in, and they're coming in always to get money. That's all they want to do, is come in and get money and go back out the door. And so I confess I have a tough time with it. And they'll come in, and they'll go, well, you know, I'm driving from Fort Lupton to it's always Fort Lupton, Colorado Springs, I don't know why, but I'm driving from Fort Lupton to Colorado Springs, and we ran out of gas. And I thought, wow, you ran out of gas here? That's like 4 miles out to the highway. How did that happen? And then I feel the Lord saying, Steve, you got to love them too, even if they're out just to get something from you got to love them. And so I wrap my arm around him and I pray for him and I tell him, look, we just don't have the money, or if I have some cash in my pocket, I'll give him a little cash. But the bottom line is, I know they're trying to take us. And yet, what does God tell me to do? You tell me. Love him. Yeah, that's right. Love him. And so I spend some time with them talking and find out what's going on in their life and let him, instead of just taking the $2 and running or whatever. You know, also, one of the things that I have to think about and you might think about is a program. If we decide to work a program in our life, do you know that's about efficiency in the Christian life? Do you realize that a lot of times we want our Christian life to be efficient? Now, let me give you an example of that. I sit in my study, and a lot of times, and I'm kind of a wired up kind of guy, so a lot of times I'll sit in my study, you know, and I want to spend some time with the Lord, so I think, now, how can I do this efficiently so I get the most out of it? You ever do that? And so what do? We have our prayer list so we could efficiently pray for everybody, make sure they get prayed, and then I may even pull out the church directory and pray for each and every one of you because that's efficient. That's going to get the kingdom done. And then all of a sudden it occurs to me, oh, wait a minute, maybe God just wants me to sit and be quiet and fellowship with him. That's lifestyle. And that's hard to do. Because we're so efficient in America. Everything we do is efficient, right? In fact, we pretty much dog all the people that aren't efficient. If they don't walk fast enough or on the job, if they're just standing there, we got to get a broom and sweep. It's always got to be efficient. And so we get in our Christian life, and it's always got to be efficient. And that's what a program is. That's not what a lifestyle is. A lifestyle says, Steve, you can sit in your chair and you and I can have fellowship together. You don't have to pray for anybody. You could just fellowship with me, and we can have a good time of loving each other. That's lifestyle. We value God because of who he is. We value people because of their value. Loving and serving others is meant to be our Christian lifestyle. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. That's what Jesus says. That's the lifestyle focus that helps us to look outward, outside of ourselves, and towards others. But we have to be available. We have to have a generous heart. And when I say we have to have a generous heart, I mean we have to be willing to give of ourselves, no matter what it is. For God so loved the whole world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever should believe in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God so loved the world that he gave. You know, when I think of generosity, it takes me back to a time, you know, you look at farmers, and farmers have a sense of loving the ground. Have you ever, we have a lot of farmers in this church. And one of the things that I realize about them is they go out and they pick up the soil and they look at it and they smell it and that kind of thing. I have never been a soil smeller in my life, right? I am just not a farmer. And you know, and they have this lifestyle of always tilling the ground, planting and growing and harvesting and doing it over and over, and they don't get tired of the repetition of that. And then, you know, for a farmer, it's interesting because they always have to be available, right? They have to get out of bed, and they have to go do it, and there's nobody really in their life to tell them to get out of bed. Well, maybe the wife, you know, but they get out of bed. And they go till the ground. And then there's that sense of generosity that every farmer has to have. They have to be willing to throw a lot of seed to get a crop. You know, the one time that I really I decided to do a little farming. We had an acre of land when I was a young boy, and my mom, she always was doing something different, still is. She's in her 80s and still always, I never know what she's going to be doing. But she wanted to farm this, you know, or at least grow gardens. So we all had to get out there and break up the sod and till it. And, you know, as a kid, you know how that is. Oh, man, I just didn't want to do it. And we got out there, and so we got this whole area wiped out. And so then she gave me a packet of seeds for some carrots. And she said, okay, Steve, you're going to plant carrots this year. And then Julie was going to plant, you know, whatever. And Sherry was going to plant her stuff. And so I dug a trench about, 2.5 feet. And then put all the seeds in that 2.5 feet and closed it up. And I thought, all right, I'm going to have the crop, you know. And so it's going along, and all of a sudden they all start sprouting. I mean, it's just sprouting all over. And so my mom comes out, she has this book, and she says, well, according to this book, you're supposed to pull out those carrots because otherwise they're not going to be able to grow. And I said, I am not pulling out any carrots. I mean, they're growing just fine. I'm not going to pull any carrots out. And so she says, no, honey, I think you're supposed to pull the carrots out. And I said, I'm not going to do that because it looks like I've got about 32 carrots here. And if I pull those out, I'm only going to end up with 16 or 12. I'm not going to do that. And she's like, oh, okay, because she didn't know much more than I did. So it came to reap season, and I had 32 carrots, all about that long. And I thought, well, you know, I spread all those seeds out, and I picked them up, and I pulled them out, and I wipe them off and eat one. Tastes like dirt and carrot. But I looked